Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and we are back here with another SNL podcast, and I'm here with our SNL expert. He's blogging all the time about the ways to fix SNL, among other things. Here he is. It's Rich Tackenberg, and he's here in studio.
Thank you for having me in person. Wonderful to be here.
Yes, great to have you here in person, and this is a lot of fun. I'm trying out some new things with the new studio, so you're the first official guest besides Nicole to be here in the Rob Has a Podcast studio.
I like that. I'm the maiden voyage of Rob Has a Studio. This is great.
Yes, the maiden voyage. So here we go, and we're here to talk about some SNL. And now it is a big, what we like to do is about once a month after the new SNLs finish airing, get together and talk about what happened. I know a lot of people were upset, Rich, believe it or not, back in December when we did not get a chance to talk about the Martin Short and who was the other one?
No, it was Mars.
Jamie Foxx.
We were overshadowed by the Survivor finale, understandably. It was a crazy day. It was poor timing.
And I was actually, I went to go film the Survivor or go do a podcast live at the finale. So it was poor timing by Saturday Night Live. So bad job by Lorne Michaels scheduling.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
I didn't even get to see that Saturday Night Live until they re-aired it like the following Saturday at like 10 o'clock at night. That following weekend, so I didn't even see it for a while. But the Martin Short episode was very good.
Very good episode.
Yeah, it's almost like the last episode in December is becoming sort of like a homecoming weekend now, where more and more people are showing up. And was that always the case, or is that a recent phenomenon?
I think it's a recent phenomenon, but I think we're seeing that more and more. I think Jimmy Fallon did the Christmas episode last year. But the year before that, I think, looking at my notes here, was Jeff Bridges. So I think maybe it's just a little bit more. Also, networks, they've really taken to this idea more broadly of the fall finale, this new marketing hook that we could talk on another podcast about where it came from. It was actually stolen from Doctor Who, according to a marketing insider that I know, in the way that they do it in Britain. But they're really sort of really trying to market everything. So I think the SNL, the Christmas episode, is sort of becoming sort of the fall finale. So they're booking big alumni guests to make a big splash for that that fall finale.
Okay, so on this episode, we are going to talk about the Adam Levine episode from this past Saturday of Saturday Night Live. And then we're also going to talk about our Jennifer Lawrence episode from last week. And also, Rich, let me just tease this. If you watched it, did you watch The Office this week?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'd like to talk about that too at the end of the show.
Absolutely. So bring it on.
Stick around for that at the end of the show. So let's jump into Adam Levine, Blink-182, host of one of the hosts of The Voice, which I think returns this
week. I thought it was March, but you may be right.
No, I have no idea. I just saw a commercial for it. And what's going on? Aguilera is out?
Aguilera and CeeLo are taking a year off.
And they're coming back?
Supposedly they're coming back. I have a hunch we will never see the likes of CeeLo or Christina Aguilera again.
And did CeeLo get in trouble? Is CeeLo didn't he do something? Was there some sort of a violence issue? I remember seeing like a CeeLo mugshot at some point.
Wow. I think every shot of CeeLo looks like a CeeLo mugshot. Was there a parrot or a cat in the shot? Because if not, then it probably was a mugshot.
And will Christina Aguilera and Britney just go off and do their own talent judging show, like the Britney and Christina talent judging show together in the next year?
That would be, it would, you know, they could call it The Phone, because just every judge phoning it in would be an interesting show. But, you know, ABC wants to get in on this. Let's go for it.
All right. So Adam Levine, and we start off with.
But before, if I may, just to toot our own horn.
Yes.
In this case, specifically me, but I was very proud of this. You may or may not remember the last SNL podcast we did. We were talking about coming up. I can't remember who Jeremy Renner was the host with musical guest Maroon 5. And at that time, on this very podcast, I was very quick to say, I don't understand why Adam Levine is not hosting the show. He wants to be an actor. He's a big musical guest. He's the host of one of the biggest shows on NBC. It doesn't make any sense. And lo and behold, here we are.
Were you surprised it was Adam Levine with a musical guest and not Adam Levine as the musical guest as well, a double duty?
It did not surprise me because Maroon 5 had just been on.
Okay.
So I think it was not a planned thing. I think having Levine back just a few months ago was probably we should probably have him on, a little talk from the unscripted team over there at NBC, like, hey, it'd be great promotion, let's do this. So I'm not surprised, only because, you know, I think Maroon 5 has been on the show 13 times.
Is that a joke?
No,
or?
I think it's three.
Okay.
It feels like 13.
Feels like 13.
It feels like 13.
Okay.
So anyway, I was very excited because of our prediction to see Mr. Levine finally take the reins of the show.
All right. So there he is. And here comes, in our first sketch this week, we have Obama, the Jay Farrow as President Obama, fresh off the inauguration, visited by the ghost of Martin Luther King Jr. Rich, what was your take on this?
I will say this is probably the first time that Keenan has made me laugh in seasons.
Ooh.
I can't remember the last Keenan sketch that I particularly liked, but this sketch, it just felt so inappropriate that it just really made me laugh. I will say I like the fact that Keenan has just given up on actually doing impressions. It doesn't matter if he's in a Homeland sketch or it's just Keenan just walks on and does his same. He does Cornel West and then everyone else is the same. So he didn't even try to do a Martin Luther King. He was just doing himself.
Was there much difference between the Martin Luther King impression and the Ray Lewis impression?
Yeah, I think just eye makeup was really the only difference. So it felt like the sketch was fairly racist, that we're just seeing Martin Luther King comment on Beyonce and bangs and stuff.
Right.
But I guess the rule of thumb is if black people say it, it's inherently not racist. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seemed odd to me that I feel like you're going to go there and bring back the ghost of Martin Luther King Jr. to just have him say like stereotypical things. I mean, that was... it would seem to be ballsy to go ahead and do that.
I mean,
I don't want to say, I don't think it's my place to say what's in good taste and what's in poor taste. That seemed ballsy to me.
I totally agree. But I will say to that point, with this show and any show, if you're going to go there, go there. And the fact that they did, if they made the choice and then they committed to it, it did make me laugh. I mean, it was so stupid, but it was good energy. It was decent pacing. It was very silly. It wasn't too long. So I thought, I wouldn't have predicted it. I wouldn't have called it. I wouldn't have done it. But if you're going to do it, it really made me laugh.
Okay. So we'll leave that to other people to decide if it was in good taste or not. There were some funny moments. There was some
yes.
I did like the line of I think he was talking about Beyonce saying that he saw her in one of his famous dreams.
Right.
That was a good line.
Right. I like when he's talking about Michelle Obama with the bangs, and he said, "What is she going to star in an episode of New Girl?" It was such a silly line. I like that.
So then we come out of that and get to the monologue, Rich, and we have a monologue which I actually appreciated because, one, you would have said ahead of time, "Oh, Adam Levine, he's going to sing." But is it like the reverse thing where anybody who doesn't sing normally comes on Saturday Night Live and they want to sing, but a singer comes on Saturday Night Live and he chooses to not sing in the monologue?
Exactly. It's always, I think, the big reason to come on SNL is to break stereotype. So every actor wants to show that they're also a singer, and every singer wants to come on and show that they can act. So, and I think, and we'll talk about this too when we get to Jennifer Lawrence, I actually think for someone who's never hosted Saturday Night Live before, comedic actors and comedians are always the best, but I would rather see a musician or a sports figure come on more than a dramatic actor or actress, because I think being a musician and being in front of a live audience every night is better preparation for doing Saturday Night Live than being an actor. And I think comparing Jennifer Lawrence, I think that it was interesting to see Levine come in, and I think being a musician, he was more comfortable and handled himself in the monologue better than a Jennifer Lawrence did.
Okay. And I don't disagree. And I think you also get to see the other people in the cast do a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yes.
And say, okay, Peyton Manning is on. We don't have to give him a lot to do.
Yes.
Let's, you know, let the supporting actors on the show be really funny and keep, you know, and just use our people where they, rather than somebody who's dramatic who trying to be funny.
Exactly. I think that's always, unless you're bringing on an alum, that's always the best way to go. And we kick pretty very quickly into the monologue. We go right into a parody of The Voice, which I thought, all right, you know your sweet spot. Let's go to it. Let's have at it.
Yeah. And so we had three people returning to be Adam Levine's coach for hosting Saturday Night Live. We had Andy Samberg.
Yep.
Very quick return to the show. Although Kristen Wiig, she was already back in, yep. But very briefly.
Yes.
Very, very briefly. A very quick cameo. Were you surprised to see Samberg back here and with a digital short, which we will talk about later?
I never thought that Samberg and Levine were necessarily buddies, even though we know Levine has been in a number of the digital shorts. So I didn't expect it. Once I saw him, I made the connection. And also, it's like, you know what? It was good that Andy left. I was actually, while this was cute, I was like, I think we're good without Andy. I don't think Andy needs to come back. I hope that he gets this out of his system and moves on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, definitely cute. I liked it. He said something about, I've been in over 100 digital shorts and 3 live sketches,
which yeah,
that was a very, very good line. But overall, I think we're good with Andy Samberg. I think we can move on from him.
Do you think the fact that he was on this week's show speaks to the nothingness that's going on in Andy Samberg's post-SNL career?
I think especially the fact that we had a digital short, yes. If it wasn't for the digital short, I would have said, nah, I think you're reaching. He's throwing something to his brother, Adam Levine, who he's obviously friends with. But the fact they did a digital short, I think there's the Lonely Island is definitely looking at contingency plans right now.
Looking a little lonely. I also saw Andy Samberg recently in a commercial for a Windows phone.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. Yes. No,
he can't even get the Apple endorsement. That's troubling.
Getting a Windows phone. Yeah. Then, in addition to Samberg, and I like this sketch. I thought it was funny.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So in addition to Samberg, we have Cameron Diaz, which I thought was also an odd person to have there in that spot. I don't think of her as a SNL hosting coach.
No, it was an odd call, but I felt she really threw herself into it. It was a little bit of a dig at Christina Aguilera, a little inside baseball. You have to really know The Voice to get the stupid hat and her hands always being up in the air. And I'm not a Cameron Diaz fan. I'm always been like, but I thought she just did a very, very solid job. Quick, good timing, good energy, very funny.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, the real curveball, then we had Seinfeld.
Boy, Seinfeld's got nothing to do. He was on Conan a couple of weeks ago doing Who's On First routine.
Yeah.
Was like, I mean, what is going on?
No, I believe that was on the Jimmy Fallon show.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep, you're right. You're right. I confuse my former and current late night host. Yeah.
Yes.
So apparently he's just hanging around 30 Rock looking for something to do these days. So a very fun idea on sort of the being a Jew in comedy.
Yeah,
and,
that was good.
And sort of the talking about him and Levine both being less Jew looking than their name would indicate. So, you know, he's just gold. He's, you know, I don't think it was like the best thing ever, but it was just great to see him. So I just thought really solid for a monologue, which are traditionally thrown together at the last minute. Very, very solid. Ending with Levine taking his shirt off.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what people are looking for these days with
is
Adam
that,
Levine.
Is that what they expect
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't think if I were Levine, I'd be that proud with the tattoos. It's a little off-putting to me. Maybe it's me.
I don't know.
He reminded me of like the lead in that show Prison Break. If the guy from Prison Break was breaking out of like a county jail, just like it wasn't that involved of a map or something. Like just, I don't know. Those tattoos.
A lot of tattoos.
Yeah, they're not working for me. But,
okay.
But overall, I thought very solid, solid monologue.
Yeah, very good. I liked it. I enjoyed it, and no singing, so
yes.
That was very good.
Yeah.
So we go into the first commercial, and we have a commercial for the Rosetta Stone tie edition. I thought this was a little bit one joke that just went on and on and on.
Yeah, and I thought very similar to what we were talking about before with the Martin Luther King, like if you're gonna go there, go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was a sketch where they started to go there but never really went there. Whether this is your type of comedy or not, if you're gonna make fun of guys going to Thailand to sleep with prostitutes, then you need to really go there. And I don't know that they really hit that. I think they kind of they skirted it a little bit, but they didn't get as creepy and off-putting as it should have been to pull this off.
Yeah, I just felt like by the time I figured out where they were going, I was just like, Boy, we went a really long way to get to, you know, a Thai prostitute joke.
Yes, yes. and I know I'm not the first to say this, but watching it, and I've read others say the same thing, it made me feel like without people like Chris Parnell, Will Ferrell, and Will Forte, we don't really have solid creepy on the show. Like, nobody in the cast plays really good creepy anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a good thing, but I thought that the sketch was really lacking. In that.
Yeah. So after the commercial, we come back for a sketch which is called Circle Work. And I always cringe when it's like the sketch is, all right, and now it's a, you know, here's, it's a fake talk show.
And as soon as you see Keenan, yes, the bat radar has got to go off. It's Deep House Dish, like PSTD. I'm really like, I'm twitching. I'm like, oh, is this going to be the CeeLo Green show? Yes. It's like, oh.
I'm rarely ever a fan of the fake SNL talk show. And Circle Work?
Yes.
Again, I don't even know. I don't really understand the reference.
I assume that it's a reference to Circle. Circle Jerk. I'm gonna guess. I don't want to speak for the writers, but yeah, that's my guess. Yeah. Yeah, this was another tough sketch. Although I will say, I thought that Adam did a very good job, like committing, playing the role. I think a lot of times, especially with musicians and sports stars, they will kind of half-ass it when it comes to playing a woman or playing a gay character or playing something very extreme. And I felt like Levine was in. He was all in. He pushed his chips all in, and he did it well.
Yeah. There was a couple of funny things. I liked the stuff with Vanessa Bayer as the friend of the
yes,
who doesn't take a hint, and she wore the T-shirt with no underwear. That was I like that. And then also the spelling out of "you're a gay goose"
as a gay goose in a gay goose parade, and it just kept going on and on. I did again. Keenan made me laugh doing that. Absolutely, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I did like that. But again, I don't know if this was like a first sketch out of the box.
Well, especially when you're not, when the point of the sketch is, some gay men think that every straight man is secretly gay. It sort of didn't go anywhere beyond that. Even with Sudeikis, like, oh, I am gay, wasn't really a big payoff for me. So, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So then we have another commercial parody. I guess we'd call it a trailer parody.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the upcoming, or did it already air, Rich? The Carrie Diaries?
Yes, Carrie Diaries has already started there. I've TiVo'd it.
Okay.
I have not watched it yet.
The curiosity factor is a very appealing to me of the, I would check it out for one episode.
I will probably watch it. I have been told, and I have read, it is more like a John Hughes movie than a Darren Star TV show.
Yes.
So I will check it out.
Does
at some
the
point.
Young Carrie have an affinity for horrible puns?
That remains to be seen. I hope so for continuity's sake. Yeah.
And seems to be omniscient to everything else that everyone else in the world is doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So loved Sopranos Diaries.
Okay, I didn't love it. I'll be interested. I loved the idea of it, and I loved the impressions in it, but I didn't love it. But I'm glad to hear you did.
Yeah, I loved it. I was really cracking up the whole time. That was very inspired. really, really good stuff. And I thought Bobby Moynihan did a great Gandolfini. I thought all the impressions were really great.
I thought he was good. I thought Bill Hader was probably the best.
Yeah.
At really nailing it. And then obviously Edie Falco, that, you know, we've seen, what's her name? Kate McKinnon do, yeah, Edie Falco before. That's a very solid impression. So yeah, the impressions were cute. I thought it kind of didn't go anywhere. It was a little meandering, a little long for my days, but
it was long.
Definitely funny. Yeah.
But I liked it. And then we had Melfi, the guidance counselor.
Oh yes. Yeah.
I liked that they were in the cafeteria just like eating like spaghetti. Fighting about Rubik's Cube.
The Rubik's Cube thing was very funny.
Yeah, yes. I thought that was very funny. I did really like the Sopranos Diaries.
Yeah. All right, good.
Yeah. all right, so then after the commercial, we come back. And now I thought this was a very odd sketch again, which I have to say, I did laugh. with Bill Hader as the gay firefighter.
Yes.
Now, I did not laugh at the jokes in this sketch. I laughed at Bill Hader was, I thought was very, especially when he started screaming, was very funny. But to do circle work and Bill Hader as the gay firefighter who doesn't realize he's gay back to back really seemed really jumped out to me.
Yes, I thought the same thing. I thought, oh, we're having a, there's a lot of we're doing a lot of gay take on kind of stuff, especially those two both being back to back.
And maybe if it was like, you know, Elton John hosting and not Adam Levine, like I would say, oh, okay, we're doing a lot of topical stuff. But it just seemed like we're really, for no good reason, doing just a lot of jokes about people who don't know they're gay. Didn't really understand. It seemed odd that they would do that back to back.
And it definitely, like, everything about this sketch screamed 1250. Like, this was such a post-update sketch that somehow got moved early up in the lineup, and I don't know why. I liked it as you did, and for the same reason. It really reminded me, if you remember the Bobby Moynihan and Cicely Strong playing the McDonald's employees in the Anne Hathaway sketch from earlier in the season or last year. I thought similarly, it wasn't the most well-written sketch. I don't even know what the point was, but just it was fun to sit back and watch the performance and watch Hader commit 150% to it. So that really made me laugh.
How many of the screams that he did towards the end did you think were just ad-lib?
Oh, at least half of them. I think he was just off the rails, just, and he knew, I think, sort of like a, I think he knew the jokes themselves weren't landing, so he just strapped that sketch on his back and ran. And he's like, all right, I'm taking everything to 11, let's see what happens. It was very funny. And by the way, I loved the fact that they didn't even bother doing a lame reference to why is this clearly gay person pretending to be straight. Like, they just, the sketch was what it was, and then the sketch ended and made me laugh, so that was good.
All right, so then we come out with a YOLO song from the Lonely Planet guys. I don't know. I don't know, but like again, as always, very well produced, very very slick. But it's almost like, you know, I don't really get the joke of, okay, yes, so everybody's like, you only live once, so we're going to be very safe and very conservative about how we live our lives because we only live once. It's like, I thought it was, the whole premise was a bit of a stretch.
It reminded me again of why it was nice to see Andy Samberg wrap it up. And I think, you know, it's that coming back one too many times. Like, you know, it should have just left it with Lazy Sunday 2. That would have been a nice, like, okay, this was a... What, same with you. And like Adam Levine was like central to the digital short in the very beginning, and then he kind of disappears for a lot of it, and then he comes back, and Danny what's his name,
McBride,
Danny McBride in it, but doing absolutely nothing.
He's doing coke.
Yeah, but no, like, there was just sort of nothing to it. So I thought it was a miss. I was pleasantly reminded that we don't have to sit through these. There was a point where we were watching one of these a week. So it was like, oh yeah, let's leave it to the commercial parodies.
It just
we're
didn't
good.
Seem like it was worth it to come back for this, to do the, oh, I've got it, YOLO, and then it's got to be, you got to be very conservative because you only live once.
Yeah. I don't know. And you can't blame it on the fact that these guys have been in a factory mentality. They're cranking out one a week. They're not all going to be great. These guys didn't have to do it.
They came out of retirement for this.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing nothing. Obviously, they spent a lot of time on this, a lot of sets, a lot of setups, you know. So I don't know. I wouldn't have staked my claim on this one. I didn't quite get the idea.
Well, okay. Yeah. If they were going to come out of retirement, you would have liked to have seen them do something topical, something, you know, something viral. But I don't know if this was it. No, we could go on YouTube, and this is like the you know.
I doubt this is viral. This is more bacterial.
Gangnam Style.
This is more bacterial than viral, I think. I think a couple of antibiotics and this one goes away.
All right. So how about musical act here?
Who was that?
Lamar?
Kendrick Lamar. So he's not only the forward for the Clippers, he's also a musical act. Is that the I'm not really clued in to the genre.
I'm not familiar with his work.
Okay, maybe that's Lamar Odom.
Yes.
I don't know what the difference. Kendrick Lamar, I've never heard of him. As always, I fast-forwarded through him, so I have no comment. I noticed I don't know if he was busy smoking a cigarette before the routine or if he had some errands to run. He was still wearing his jacket and hat. Mm-hmm. I thought he could have timed it a little better to, you know what, take your coat off. Stay for a while. You don't have to be rushing around. You don't have to, you know, this is a professional show, network television. You don't need to be wearing a jacket and a hat for this thing. Let's go. Your coat.
Rich, you're very old school.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. Oh, and wait till we get to the Lumineers. I have more to say about them, too. We'll get to those guys.
All right, so we get to Weekend Update here.
Yes.
And we have a couple of visits here for Weekend Update. We have a return of Arianna Huffington.
And I love Arianna Huffington. I think this is one of the underrated Weekend Update characters. Pedrad does a great impression. I think it's traditionally a very well-written sketch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not huge laughs. It's not Stefan, but I think it's very solid. So I was very happy to see her back.
I just don't, and again, I don't see Arianna Huffington speak that often, but what would be the difference between if you had Nassim Pedrad as Arianna Huffington and just had Arianna Huffington?
Not much. Not much. Yeah, it's just the jokes. You're just, you know, it's all.
She's funnier than the real Arianna Huffington.
Yes, and I don't know that the real Arianna Huffington would be hitting on Seth so shamelessly. So I guess those are the two. But just, I thought that was really well written. So I thought that was really good.
Yeah. So, but it's really not really an impression, or I shouldn't say an impression.
It's not a character. We're not getting comedy that's coming out of, oh, here's the crazy, unique world of. It's not like James Carville,
yes,
where he's sort of like he's the snake, you know, in the. But it's basically a bunch of political jokes through kind of liberal feminist personality. But it's almost like she's the straight person because instead of the jokes making fun of Arianna Huffington, she's actually making really good points, and they're talking about women in the military. I love that whole routine about how, you know, there are so many women killing men. That, you know, if you watch Investigation Discovery, there's all these shows about women killing men. So I thought it was really good.
Well, does that sketch even need to be Arianna Huffington? If they just said, okay, now let's talk to our our women's issues correspondent Nassim Pedrad, and
right,
couldn't she just do that sketch as Nassim Pedrad,
yes,
and do that? I mean, I don't know why she has to be Arianna Huffington.
It's a good point. I think it gives it. I like it. I like the character, or I should say, I like the impression of her. But it's not like she needs to be made fun of. So you're right. That could just be a character or a commentary.
Yeah,
it's got to be a woman, though. I would say it's not like those jokes written for Seth Meyers would land as well.
It could be
just Nassim doing a character. I agree with you. You make a good point.
I mean,
there.
I'm assuming that she writes this.
Probably, although you never know. But probably, yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
But definitely, it's coming from a woman. Whoever the woman is that's writing this,
right,
should just perform it as the woman.
Yes, it would probably hit harder without the character and the voice on top of it. You're probably right.
Yeah. So then we also have a visit from Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis. Yes.
Yes.
I don't know enough about Ray Lewis.
Very emotional, Ray
okay,
Lewis.
Okay, yeah.
Very emotional.
Again, Kenan Thompson just comes on and basically just does Kenan Thompson,
yes,
this time in a football jersey.
Yeah, he was pretty good. I actually thought he nailed the Ray Lewis dance also.
Okay,
very good.
Okay.
Very good job by by Kenan there. Any great jokes for you this week on the Weekend Update?
Nothing that comes to mind. I can't. There probably was, but I can't remember anything specific now.
All right, so then we come out of the Weekend Update and we have a real battle between arch nemesis Maroon 5 and Train.
Yes. Well, here's what I love about this sketch. Just so, talk about insulting. The sketch is Adam Levine with the actual other, the Maroon 4 are there playing extras in a sketch about Maroon 5. They actually get less screen time than the extras they hired to look like the other guys in Train.
Mm-hmm.
So you think, you know, your buddy Adam gets the nod to host. He asks you to do a sketch, and you're just eating pretzels at the bar. I feel like that was more insulting than not even asking those guys to show up. So I don't know what they were doing in the background. It was kind of a waste of time.
Who should be more insulted, the other members of Maroon 5 or the members of Train?
I'm going to, you know, if I think at least if you're sitting at home in the comfort of your home watching yourself being mocked, that's a little bit better than watch it. Like, you can't even see the sketch because your back is to the sketch going on about your band. I think that's probably worse.
Now, give me some background on Train. I know they do, Drops of Jupiter?
And, yes.
You know, honestly, this is how foggy it has gotten in my brain. I can't tell you if, I think I'm getting Train and like Third Eye Blind and Matchbox 20 all, give me the body of work on Train.
Well, I know,
When did they first come on the scene?
Hold on, I'm going to tell you right now. Around 98 is when they sort of came on the scene. Meet Virginia was their, I think, their first big hit, then Drops of Jupiter.
She doesn't own a dress.
Yeah, but then they recently came back again. They had some hit. And of course, I'm not going to pull it while we're talking. 50 Ways to Say Goodbye, maybe that was it. They were around for quite a while. Pat Moynihan, the lead singer for Train, I have heard just through stupid gossip channels, is supposed to be a huge pain in the ass.
Oh.
He is supposed to. I know the band broke up and then they got back together, and I obviously know firsthand knowledge of this, but
so
I
this
hear
is
he's
why
a pain
it's
in the
confusing
ass.
Because they were around and then they weren't around, and then they came back again. Now they're not around again.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where it's confusing.
Yeah, a lot of the sketch was confusing because it sort of was like it was like an idea that they were like, you know what? We don't have to have a fully formed thought before we start writing. Let's just write stuff down and see if we can figure out a point in the writing process. And then it kind of never happened. It was kind of like, oh, they're going to fight, but they're not going to throw punches. But then that kind of didn't go anywhere.
Yeah,
I liked the Jason Mraz impression. That made me laugh. I thought that was fun. So
John Mayer shows up.
John Mayer for no reason, and like it's so not well thought out that it's like they're playing the track of the people, you know, like John Mayer singing, what's his name? Bill Hader is not moving his lips to meet the song at all.
To meet Virginia.
Yeah, so it sort of didn't make any sense. I don't know what they were doing there.
Yeah, and then I did like a Darius Rucker appearance.
And yet, once again, was that even close to a Hootie impression? Nope, it was just Keenan with like a goatee on his face being Keenan as Hootie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, okay, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, it was stupid enough that it did. I did chuckle through this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me see. Hold on. Let me list of songs recorded by Train here on Wikipedia. So. Let me see any. So the big one was Drops of Jupiter, Meet Virginia, and was that it? Was that sort of like a?
No, they had more than that. I'm not pulling them, unfortunately, but I know that they did have more than them.
Okay, all right.
Hey Soul Sister, that was another big song of theirs. So yeah. And truly, almost all these songs could have been Maroon 5 songs, which I think was the point of the sketch. So I definitely got that.
Okay.
Yeah.
very good. Maybe we can get Train to record a theme song for Rob as a podcast or for the SNL podcast.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah. All right. So then we come back to we have a parody of the show Catfish from MTV. Now, Rich, we didn't talk about the Manti Te'o scandal at all.
Correct.
In our conversations the last couple of weeks. Where are you on Manti Te'o in catfishing?
That's it. You know, I'm so disconnected from the Manti Te'o sketch. It's so odd to me as a non-sports guy that this is this big of a story, other than it's a little bit of a fluky kind of silly thing. So I'm almost more amused by the amount of coverage that this gets than I am the scandal itself. It seems quite silly to me.
And I have gone on the record very much. I believe Manti Te'o is lying.
Okay.
I don't believe the catfish story. Yes, I believe people do get catfished. I don't believe Manti Te'o was catfished.
Right.
Just to put that out there.
That seems to be the logical. But just so I know as an outsider, what is the reason that you think he was lying about that whole story in the first place before getting caught?
I just think it's a lie that got out of hand. I don't think it was so calculated that he was going to win the Heisman. I think it was just sort of like that he said in passing, they asked him about a girlfriend, like, oh, I had a girlfriend, she died.
Right.
And then somebody else asked him, like, oh, tell us more about that girlfriend that you had that died. She got a car accident, and then she had leukemia, and, you know, and then, like, more and more people just kept, you know, coming back to him, like, hey, I heard about your girlfriend, I'm so sorry, man. It's sort of like, you know, when Ferris Bueller told somebody that he was sick,
Then right,
you know, more and more people they turn into, then like the whole school's like, hey man, hey Ferris, I heard you only have 5 weeks to live.
Got it, okay, and it
just sort of snowballed, and there was no coming back from it.
Got it, okay,
now,
fair enough.
And then make up the whole catfish thing as a way out.
Got it. Now, I've never seen the show Catfish.
No, neither have I.
I don't know if you know this or not, but now once you turn 40, MTV is removed from your cable lineup.
No, I didn't know
that. Yes, no, they don't broadcast it, but it was I think it was like a clause put in one of these bills, so I can no longer see MTV.
Okay,
so I haven't seen it, so I don't know who this guy is that Adam Levine was making fun of. Mm-hmm. But all right,
Nave,
whatever.
Nev, whatever.
It seemed very transparent. The sketch, not even knowing the show, I sort of felt like, oh, I can obviously guess exactly where this is going, and it went exactly where I thought it was going, and no surprises anywhere along the way.
Okay. So we have another musical appearance there.
Yes. All I know is he obviously had a couple of minutes to prepare because he took his coat off, took off the wool cap, settled in. He had on a nice spiffy clean t-shirt.
That's nice.
And I guess he did a song called, I don't know. I don't even know what he did.
So, all right.
Yeah.
So
I fast forwarded through it.
The next sketch here, Rich. Now, I know you are an unapologetic Bobby Moynihan fan.
Oh, don't get me started.
Okay.
Yes, we'll be coming to that very soon.
Well, here we were coming
to it. But in this sketch, I don't know why we needed to see. This was Janet.
Yes.
Seducing Adam Levine.
Now, this is not the first appearance of Janet, correct?
No, we've seen him before. Janet was with football player
Tom Brady. And was it with Channing Tatum also?
That could be. I don't remember, but that sounds right.
The second or third iteration of Janet.
Yes. Never really did much for me. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And then my buddy Mark just today reminded me of or his insight, which really hit it for me, is it's sort of a cut-rate version of Horatio Sanz's Carol character. Remember Horatio Sanz playing Carol, which really was very funny. I mean, completely predictable, completely obvious, completely stupid, but just kind of nailed it every time. This feels like they're just writing that sketch again, but the Janet character not nearly as strong. And I love Bobby M. I love my me some Bobby M. But I don't think this was
there was a couple of good lines.
Couple of funny lines, good performances. Levine completely committed. Moynihan always cute. And you know what? When we're talking about 12:45 at night, cute. It was definitely cute.
I wondered, where did they get the Danny Glover curtain for the bed?
Right. Is the props department scouring the world for a Danny Glover poster?
Or
are they trying
that?
To make that? Yeah. Or is that what they found and they had to write in, oh, it was going to be Mel Gibson, but we found a Danny Glover poster, so they rewrote to match the wall hanging. I don't know.
What was your favorite line from Janet?
I don't even remember. You know what? It kind of all went by in a blur. Do you have a favorite line?
I liked when talking about what Janet looks like, and it was like, are you kidding me? I look like as a woman, I look like when they dressed up E.T.
That's right.
That was a good one.
Yes. So, you know, as a late sketch in it, definitely amusing, and that was about it. Yeah.
All right. So then the last sketch of the night here on Adam Levine was the Biden bash. Now, tell me, what is it about Sudeikis in this slot, like the 12:55 slot about, you know, he has done for years the whatever, like, it's the crazy rally. Of
yeah, the underground. Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And so this felt like that to me.
Yeah, no, this was just like a quick...
Doing that as Biden.
A quick throw together. Yeah, I don't know if they originally had dreams that maybe this would be a sketch that happens earlier on. I don't know. But I think it wise to just cut it down to a very short piece, throw it on at the end. You know what? I could watch him do Biden once a week. It's such a stupid impression, but it definitely makes me laugh.
I was laughing during the talking about who Obama had, what the musical acts Obama
yes.
had. And then Joe Biden says, well, we've got Neil Diamond, impersonator of the year contest
participant. Yes, that was very funny. It was very funny. Good way to end the show. Not the greatest sketch ever, clearly, but filling, 45 seconds or so of potential dead air, I thought was very funny.
Yeah, so very good. I thought it was a fun show.
Solid episode. Not one for the record books. Probably no sketch that we're going to look back in an end of the year special and nominate as anything particularly great. But amusing. Kept us laughing most of the night. Generally a pretty good episode.
Yeah, some good stuff. Some curious sketches, a return of Sandberg. But I thought it was a fun show.
Yes, I agree.
A fun show.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go back in time 1 week.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, we have the Jennifer Lawrence episode. Here's what I'll say about the
J-Law.
Yeah, the upside to the Jennifer Lawrence episode is that it really helps clarify the SNL diehards from people who are just looking to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're just looking for comedy, this is not your episode. You're not gonna have many things to say. But if you're a diehard fan, you stuck with it. This was a tough one.
Okay, so how do you want to bounce around? Or you want to go through the show?
We can bounce around, whatever. I would say just, generally speaking, again, you've got a dramatic actress who has very little live experience, very little broad comedy experience. No slight on her. I thought overall she did a good job for what she could do, but tough on the comic timing, very obviously reading cue cards. They couldn't give her a lot. She couldn't anchor any sketches. So it was tough going into it. But certainly she was game for everything. What did you think?
Yeah, I didn't think it was – I wasn't too impressed. I would say I'm trying to think of what was my favorite sketch. I think that the sketches I really liked on this episode were the ones that weren't the live action sketches. I thought there was a couple of really strong recorded pieces on
which
this episode.
I think as we've been saying all year, I feel like that's been the theme of season 38 is in a non-digital short era, the commercial parodies have really been the heavy hitting pieces. And I absolutely agree in this one. I thought, we started with Piers Morgan tonight. I don't think that the Piers Morgan character or impression is strong enough to open the show. Mm-hmm. It was kind of hey, here's a way we can cover three pop culture topics in the news in one
catch
thing.
All.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of, but the Lance Armstrong was kind of cute. A couple of funny lines I liked specifically, when he said, "Am I sorry I did it?" Yes, ish.
Yes, ish.
P.S. No. So that was very funny. A couple other things. But overall, I thought it was a weak. But then, MVP of this episode, here comes the broken record. Here comes this, the skipping album, Rich Tackenberg. Bobby Moynihan.
You loved his Manti Te'o impression?
You know what? I thought it was great. I thought it was how was it as an accurate impression? It was horrible. Yeah. It wasn't even close. Who cares? They just made him a character, the dumb guy character, as has been pointed out in the comments of our podcast. A lot of times Bobby Moynihan impressions are just buggy eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, not incorrect about that,
but
just I thought that was very funny. So I think that saved the opening. Other than that, it was a tough opening.
And Jodie Foster impression is very good.
Very good impression. Very weird that there's no call to the fact that we're on SNL doing an impression of Jodie Foster doing an SNL character at the Golden Globes. The mm-hmm. the meta was lost there, which I was very surprised to have seen Jodie Foster doing Sally O'Malley at the Golden Globes and then having a new SNL character mocking that was lost somewhere. But overall, eh. I don't know what you say about that.
Molly Shannon is breaking glasses in her apartment right now.
Exactly.
So I did not enjoy this monologue at all. I really, it felt very forced.
It was unfortunate to the inexperience. I think if Jennifer Lawrence, like, you know, like people like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who came back a second time and did a far better job, this was a decently written monologue that she just didn't have the live comedic chops to pull off. You know, she was basically, as someone said, doing David Spade, a Hollywood Minute.
Yeah.
Very true. You know, with fairly good jokes. She needed to make a turn on each one and then say, I thought your performance was absolutely riveting. And as a performer, she couldn't really make that broad enough to really sell that. Bill Hader as Tommy Lee Jones, kind of funny. Again, yeah. Making fun of, also very meta, the fact that they're making fun of his stone face reaction during a comedy piece at the Golden Globes, which again was more SNL alumni Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig doing that bit about improvising, you know, the movies. No call to that, which is odd. So, but you know, Hader always makes me laugh. Doing the Tommy dance was very funny.
So we had I thought was a very funny sketch here, and it actually became a little controversial during the week. The Starbucks Verissimo coffee maker sketch.
I picked this as my sketch of the night. I thought this was very funny. I thought it was a great sketch. I also read, like you, there was a lot of hubbub about, was this potentially a racist sketch? You know, the fact that we were specifically making fun of black baristas, which was true, even though the first voice happens to be black, the fact that the second voice was the Veronica or something, and with the big gold hoop earrings, clearly making fun of, but for people who live in, I would say, at least New York and LA, I would say it was a fairly accurate sketch in its extremes. Although I would say the Starbucks on Sawtelle and Olympic has never messed up my order, so yeah. I don't want to throw any stones. But I thought it was very funny, and I thought what sold it for me was not the voices; it was Vanessa Bayer doing the awkward white guilt, not knowing what to say, that you see at every Starbucks when this happens. I thought her kind of awkwardness about, oh, I no, this is tea. I ordered a latte, and her tentativeness, that's what sold it for me. I thought that was very funny.
I liked about how it was talking about the sugar everywhere and
right. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was good.
Yeah.
So I did enjoy that one.
Yeah.
Now we come back, and now, like I was saying earlier with the circle work. Circle work.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. It's another Saturday Night Live. It's a fake talk show. This is the Girlfriends talk show, which I did not care for the first time we did it. Was that during the Anne Hathaway episode?
Who was the person?
Actually, I don't think it was Anne Hathaway.
I'm trying to remember who the third person was. I'm blanking on who it was. I should know that.
It was another young female host from the season. And I can't remember who it was either.
I'm blanking on who it was. But yes, I did not find this sketch particularly funny the first time around. And I think it definitely lost its luster. It was even less funny this time around.
Second time also in a pre-update slot.
Yeah, no, it was a leadoff sketh. They really have a lot of belief in that. And I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe it was Anne Hathaway. It might have been Anne Hathaway. As I'm looking at the list of who hosted, I think that looks like it's probably the only other female that would make sense. It was not Christina Applegate. And I think that's the only other woman who's hosted. So yeah, it probably was Anne Hathaway. Okay. The character that they had her playing, Jesse, being the pretentious kid who's been to New York three times. She's in a punk. I liked that she was in a punk band called Vag Hat. That made me laugh. But other than that, very on the nose. The guinea pig stuff was cute, but I don't need to see the sketch again.
Yeah, we've seen where it's going. Where there was no new twist on it the second time around. It's exactly
Here's how much I disliked it. I would rather have seen another installment of J-Pop America Fun Time Now in that slot.
I thought you were going to say Circle Work.
Well, no. I didn't dislike it that much. Yeah. Also, I thought a misnote generally, it's the next sketch, but just to bring it up, to see the post-Hunger Games press conference, I felt like, who remembers the Hunger Games movie that well to remember all these jokes so much later? I thought it was weird to have the star of Hunger Games, and it wasn't nearly as funny as the Sofia Vergara Hunger Boom Hunger Games sketch that they had done back when she hosted the year before. So I thought Bobby Moynihan helped a lot, but I'm so hungry. That was cute. But other than that, really, everyone's sitting through the whole sketch. Very low energy, a lot of references to things that only people who would who had read the book would remember this far after seeing the movie. So generally a mess.
Well, this was throwing some red meat to the Hunger Games fans who tuned in to SNL just to see Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes. And, you know, when we had Daniel Radcliffe host, I thought they had a really good sketch. I've never seen a Harry Potter movie. I've never read a Harry Potter book. But the sketch was very lively. A lot of people doing impressions, very visual, a lot of gags that were relatable. This was really, really low energy, so not my favorite.
So then we had the Hobbit films trailer, which, as somebody who is not a Lord of the Rings fan, I did appreciate this, because it's like, what, really, there's three more movies?
I thought this was interesting to see one note joke, the fact that that you know, Peter Jackson has taken one movie and he's turned it, he's now stretching it into three movies. So the idea of this being they're taking the last two and ripping them into 18, I thought, you know, it was a little long. It in itself was a little bit long. They could have cut it down. But, you know, Hobbit 4, Apple Maps, An Unexpected Detour made me laugh a lot. The fact that, you know, the fact that they were all singing Billy Joel's For the Longest Time as the dwarf song, that made me laugh. Mm-hmm. I think the two quotes that I loved so much was, I wrote down, Roger Ebert notes, at one point the wind blew Gandalf's hat off and they chased it for two entire movies. And they say, Peter Travers writes, I fell asleep for 45 minutes, and when I woke up, the dwarves were assembling an IKEA dresser. That had me... Jen and I were laughing so hard at the IKEA dresser thing. Yeah. That was absolutely hilarious. So
I know how that goes.
Yeah, you know. We all know, yeah. So a little bit long, but one of the highlights of the show, clearly.
Yeah.
So anything else work for you?
From the sketch,
we could spend a lot of time talking about what didn't work, but...
Yeah, what about... are you a fan of the Anthony Crispino?
You know, interestingly, I never liked Secondhand News. But interestingly, if we can chart on a graph, my love of... of Anthony Crispino starting low and really rising, where you have Drunk Uncle, who started so high and is sort of crossing that vector at a 90-degree angle. Anthony Crispino really made me laugh. I thought it was really funny.
Now, when you're saying high, like when he gets his voice high pitch, is that what you're saying? Or are you saying it started low, like quality-wise, and got higher?
Quality, well, I think that my interest in the sketch does match his voice. It started out very low, and then it definitely, I'm pretty sure I'm liking the sketch now, Rob. I'm pretty sure it's getting funny.
I did like when Seth was was going like, I'm pretty sure that didn't happen.
Exactly. I did, for some reason, I mean, again, it's, you know, it's similar to Drunk Uncle in its writing pattern. It's just a series, you know, it's in a way similar to Stefan, of sort of lists, but I just thought these just sort of hit when he's talking about the best picture went to Fargo, which was directed by the Affleck duck. That made me laugh. When he talked about Kim Kardashian is technically married to Chris Christie, who was so mad he threw a roller coaster in the ocean. I was like, no, that's Hurricane Sandy. It was my ex-wife Sandy. But that all made me laugh.
What about raising the depth ceiling?
Yeah, that was. I like the fact that even Moynihan had this sort of break for a little bit and go, all right, that was pretty stupid. That was pretty funny. Or that Tarantino directed Sylvester Stallone in Django and Cash. So it just overall, I thought that had that was a nice sort of hit. I like that.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Maybe we could lump a bunch of these, unless you have a standout here in the post update stuff from Jennifer Lawrence, Top Dog Chef.
I would say, even though there were a couple of good jokes, the worst of the Bravo parodies, I mean, the Taron Killam doing the Watch What Happens was fantastic. Real Housewives of Disney was one of the best sketches of that year. Scarlett Johansson doing Millionaire Matchmaker. Even Abby Elliott doing Pregnant in Heels was pretty funny. This was like just these bad puns. Padma Leash Me. Tom Colicchio, Mario Barktow.
Wait, did they get the writers from the Carrie Diaries?
It felt like who put the. I like the fact that they had the whole thing about, like, you know, the challenge during the cooking was that they kept ringing a doorbell.
Yeah, I like that. That was my favorite joke.
Someone's at the door. Someone's at the door.
I'll kill you. Yeah. I don't care. Yeah.
And you finally had it, like, Jennifer Lawrence, like, woke up. Like, she had been, like, asleep the whole thing, or they wrote her characters so the fact that she could go kind of crazy. And then again, you got Bobby Moynihan saving the sketch with his impression of Hershey, the flamboyant poodle. That was very funny. Other than that, kind of a mess.
Okay. then Danielle, I didn't even understand what they were going for there.
I don't know what that, I guess, I don't know what the heck that was. And I love that. And I know I'm alone. I am on an island.
Yeah.
I love that. I thought it was weird. It was crazy. It was awkward energy. I felt like they really committed to it. I love that. I think that's what we want to see at, you know, at 12:45 in the morning, that kind of stuff.
Civil War people writing letters.
You know, I actually like that. I was one of the sketches I liked. I mean, I thought when it started, I thought it was going to be one of those, like, if you remember in the Zooey Deschanel from a year ago, her and Kristen Wiig writing letters about their boyfriends. And it just went on and on. It was a terrible sketch late in the show. This idea of sort of the almost Downton Abbey feel of writing letters. And then you got Tim Robbins and just asking for tit pics, and so that did make me laugh. I thought that was very cute.
Yeah, I did feel like it was going on a little too long, but I did think it was saved at the end of Bill Hader as the crying Lincoln.
Crying Lincoln. and I love the fact that Hader, by the way, did not bother to change for the good nights. He just came out as Lincoln waving goodbye to everybody. So yeah, exactly.
Yes, that was good.
Yeah. Like the Lumineers.
Yes.
I do like them. I'd never seen them before, so was an interesting cross between kind of Irish folk rock and Brooklyn douchiness, kind of hipster douchiness. That the guy with his wearing the what felt like a vag hat, like that kind of like. And again, I've said this before in the podcast, like, this is a programming note to the musical dudes who are musical guests on SNL should not change outfits in between songs. We all understand that the female musicians, of course, want to do that, and we respect that. But if you're a dude, don't change your outfit in between songs because you just look like a douche. So I still love, I know the
I don't have a problem with it.
The Ho-Hey and then the other song, which still was like the ooh-ah or song or something. Yeah. Still like them, but I thought they came off Little hipsterish, I'll say that.
A little precious, I think, these Lumineers are. Of, look how cute we are with our beards and our hats. And you'd almost think we're Amish.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was saying, no, they did the Richard and the Buffalo, the morning hip-hop DJ sketch.
Yes.
Which I was a big fan of the first time when Lindsay Lohan hosted. And yet this just felt like a repeat. Couple of funny jokes in it, but... I was hoping. I originally thought this could be a great sketch. I don't know.
I know a lot of people liked it the first time around. That I was sort of lukewarm on it the first time, and I remain lukewarm on it. I don't know what all the fuss is about.
I'm not right. I don't disagree with you. I was not loving it. So
yeah.
So an interesting, a tough start to 2013. Adam Levine came back and sort of helped us a little bit. We've crossed the halfway point of the season, 12 down, assuming 10 to go if history is anything to repeat. So interesting.
All right. So we have on the docket for February, the return of Biebs.
If there was ever an episode that if I could take a knee on one episode, like just literally not watch it, I promise you this is the episode to miss.
Well, I think Bieber has been good before on the show.
Has
he hosted?
No, I don't think he's hosted. Shown up is in cameo. He's been a musical. I know he's been a musical guest. I believe he's been a musical guest. I know he's done cameos.
I remember him with the church lady, but yeah, I guess that was when Dana Carvey was hosting.
I don't believe he's ever hosted.
And then I'm thinking of when Miley Ray Cyrus hosted, she was Justin Bieber, just in my mental Google of Justin Bieber Saturday Night Live. Here's what that's what's coming up.
No, well, I think it was because it was Vanessa Bayer playing Miley Cyrus and Miley Cyrus playing Justin Bieber.
Yeah,
so maybe that's what you're thinking
of. And then he was also was he on with, I want to say another time, like, I feel like I've seen him in digital. Oh, he was on with Sandberg. Also, I guess that was also when he was the musical guest, and he did like the roommate parody of the, who's the girl that was on Friday Night Lights? That was Minky Kelly was
right.
in that horrible roommate movie, and they did a parody of that with Sandberg and Justin Bieber.
Oof. The Twitterverse is a buzz that Justin Bieber has said that he is okay with them making fun of him smoking pot and him breaking up with Selena Gomez, which means that Justin Bieber's publicist should get an extra couple of bucks because nobody cares. The people who actually care about that are not going to be allowed to stay up till 11:30 at night. So I'm expecting a tough episode.
Okay.
You know, is he the mythical Justin Timberlake, you know, the musician who comes on and just turns out to be, you know, as funny as a cast member? Adam Levine was not that person. I absolutely do not think Justin Bieber is going to be that person.
I did a real quick search of Justin Bieber, Saturday Night Live. And so here's a headline from MTV.com from May 2012. Justin Bieber finds Lonely Island's SNL skit disgusting.
Wow.
So he wasn't alone.
Yeah.
Let's see. The skit opens with the three guys, including Bieber, who confuses the name Akiva for the sound of a sneeze. Talking about the guys wanted to suck their own D's. Bieber.
Yes.
So Bieber did not care for that.
Okay, well, okay. We do not care for Bieber, so I guess there's a lot of symbiosis there. Yeah.
All right, so...
And that'll be the Valentine's episode, so I'm sure he's the heartthrob Valentine's guy. So, okay. All right, whatever.
We'll see.
No announcement of who will be after him. I guess we'll all find out together.
Okay, so Bieber is up, and then any guesses on who else might show up?
Who am I feeling right now? Well, 30 Rock will have ended, so we're not going to see a Tina.
When is the 30 Rock finale?
2 weeks. Okay. This week is the penultimate episode, and then there's two back-to-back
episodes.
Why is it
ending in the middle of February?
I think that the ratings are so low, they wanted to burn it off before May sweeps.
Got it.
It seems odd to me.
Then that's going to segue into Community?
Very strange, very odd to me, but it's just been so good this season. 30 Rock, it will be missed. Yeah.
So you think a Tina Fey appearance could be?
Well,
Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to think of the timing. And I think it'll be too late for one of those. I don't think there's a value in them coming back for that. So
okay, so it's already going
to
be over.
It'll already be over by the time we get to the next episode. So, yes, I don't know who. I feel like we're probably due for a male dramatic actor, maybe. Or
Oscar. Is anybody from the Oscar mix?
I would love to see Daniel Day-Lewis host SNL. I don't think it's going to happen. You could, Ben Affleck. Be fun to see Ben Affleck come back.
I think he's too serious now.
I could see him coming back. I could see, I don't know now, but I could see him coming back.
Okay.
Now that he's been snubbed for Best Director, I think he could play the sympathy card and do a good job hosting. So we'll see.
All right, we will see. So how about, can we talk about this Office episode from this week? Now, full disclosure, I have not been watching The Office for the last two seasons.
And I have seen every episode since the pilot.
Okay. So I tuned in this week because I had read some stuff online that there was a reality show tie-in, and we're going to do some Office spoilers here of what happened in the, if you've TiVo'd The Office, first of all, get a life, really. If you've TiVo'd The Office and you don't want spoilers on The Office, really, get it.
You know what was the big Office spoiler? The writers of the last two seasons have spoiled The Office, not what you're finding out about it. Don't worry.
So if you, the episode was called Customer Loyalty.
Okay.
Okay. And so in this episode, there was a big reveal on The Office. It was almost like a watershed moment. I would compare it to on Lost when they found out that they flash forwarded into the future.
Uh-huh.
So for the first time ever, and I guess they hinted on this in the season premiere, which I did not catch, they really pulled back and let you see the camera crew that's filming the documentary or reality show of The Office.
Oh, you know what? I didn't see this happen.
Rich!
You know what? I was in Miami, and I on Thursday, I watched the previous week's episode. I'm sorry. I'm like, what are you talking about? What big spoiler was there? There was no big spoiler. Yes. Oh, I haven't seen it.
Now I spoiled it for you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have nothing to say. I didn't see it. Oh.
Okay. Oh. Well, I guess we've come this far now.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah.
Again, it was at the end of the episode.
Okay.
Jim and Pam have a big fight.
Okay.
And it's a fight over something very ridiculous. Over, you know, apparently Jim has left the office and
he's working part time at a startup in Philadelphia.
Yes.
The last episode I saw, which you did not see, they're discussing the fact that Jim is apparently thinking about moving to Philadelphia and is not discussing.
And what does this company do?
It's a startup sports marketing company mm-hmm. that he has started with some college friends. It seems to have some legs to it.
Yeah.
But it is run out of Philadelphia. He is working part-time in Philadelphia, part-time in Scranton.
Okay. So Jim is, you know, and he's getting stressed because, you know, this is the S is getting real at Jim's job. Jim's being pulled in a bunch of different directions. And the little girl has a... Their kid, Cece, is that the kid?
Yes.
She has a dance recital, and Pam has to go and film the thing on her phone, and Jim is like, all right, Pam, just promise me you're going to get this. You know how to work the phone. And she's like, Jim, I can point a rectangle at something. but meanwhile, Pam had this mural that she was trying to paint for the city or whatever, that whole annoying subplot of, you know, Pam is going to be an artist, yada, yada, yada.
I'm sorry.
Long story short, they do. She's filming the thing, and then the call comes in. She takes the call and she doesn't get the thing. Jim has a horrible day at work. They like lose a client or whatever. Jim is like, I got to put in more hours. She's like, I thought you already are putting in a lot of hours. And so he's like, well, hey, can you show me that video? I really want to see it. And she doesn't have the video to show him. And he's like, you know, Jesus Christ, Pam, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, really, first fight they've ever had in like 10 years.
Right,
Like, you know, we should be so lucky. We have Jim and Pam's marriage.
Right.
Okay. This fight that Jim and Pam had, this is like a good week for me. if I could, this would be like a high water point to have the fight that Jim and Pam had.
Right.
And so they have a fight, and then Pam gets off the phone, and she's like, she like turns to somebody, she's like, Brian, I just can't do this right now. And then now, and we pull back, and now there's like a guy, a producer, and a boom guy, and a camera guy, and like, all right, cut the cameras. So now we're really pulling back to reveal the documentary crew that is filming The Office. Now, as a reality TV podcast, I feel like it's my duty to have some thoughts on this.
Yes.
And so now, are we supposed to believe? Now, I know you were a fan of The British Office.
Oh, huge fan. Yes.
And they did end up paying that off on The British Office,
yes.
Correct? Which I haven't seen.
Oh,
but
fantastic.
I know. I know of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are we supposed to be believing? Now, is the show of The Office airing somewhere?
No, they have referred to it. They have been teasing the fact this season that they're sort of more revealing. There's been times where we see them taking their mic off or talking to someone off camera. So they've been starting that process. They've been saying something about with Pam and Jim early on. They said something about like, how long are you going to film this? Like, how interesting is a paper company going to be? And an off-camera voice says something about, well, we're really more following you two at this point. Like, that's really the story that we're telling. And then there's no payoff to it. So that's been sort of brewing a little bit.
Okay.
Do they make any, because I haven't seen it yet, do they make an explanation of if we're seeing the reality show crew, who is filming them?
No. Now, one of the I can't take credit for this. I read this on the Alan Sepinwall's hitfix.com. Uh-huh. I read in the comments section there, you know, the big fight is over that Pam is filming the daughter and didn't get the shot of the daughter, of the daughter doing the thing. And somebody wrote in the message boards, like, couldn't they talk to the camera crew that's following them to get the footage of
when you're setting it up for me? Because I haven't seen it. I assumed what you were gonna say, because you obviously said there's a reveal of the reality show. I thought, oh, the payoff is clearly going to be she's going to ask the reality show crew for the tape. No. So I just assumed that's where you were going.
No, doesn't occur to them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who would watch this? I mean, is it going to be a movie?
They never refer to it.
I mean, maybe that the only thing that might make sense, like if it was a TV show. I mean, they have now 8 years of footage. So maybe it's like going to be some documentary movie that they're going to put at Sundance or something like this of 8 years of Jim and Pam.
Right, right.
But how much footage could they?
I don't know what the possible payoff could be. And the thing that you didn't, in the British version of The Office, what they did is they don't necessarily pull back so that you see the documentary crew. What they did in the final 2 hour special is it is post the reality series airing in Britain. So now we're in a world where David Brent, who is the Michael Scott character, has looked like an idiot in front of the world and is now a very minor reality star. He ends up on the British version of Big Brother, and it is tremendous. It is absolutely must see. It's so good. But who's recording it was always incidental. So I don't know what they're going for on this one.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going to go with it. I mean, the fact that it's supposed to, if they're saying it was supposed to be about Jim and Pam the whole time, we're like following all these other characters that we could care less about and following Dwight at home to his farm and all this stuff. It's just, you know, all you would think that there are other Dunder Mifflin executives that are doing confessionals that are like in other offices, and the whole thing is to shine light on the reality show aspect of The Office seems like a big mistake for me.
Oh, in a huge way, because they did it perfectly spot on in the finale of Michael Scott. At the very end, he's about to board the plane, and as he takes off the microphone, hands the pack to someone and says, I guess I'll never need this again. And the last thing that he says to Pam, we don't hear. And that was such a perfect, it's a nod to that reality, the fact that this is the construct is a reality show, but who cares why or how or who? It was just a nod to that. Again, should have just left it there.
I will say I am much more likely to follow this story on The Office in these last couple of weeks than I was totally checked out on The Office. I am interested to see where it goes, but it's kind of a train wreck type thing where I'm rubbernecking to see how they're going to pay this off.
I'll have to see this episode, but as you may or may not remember, a year ago or over a year ago on my blog, The Rich Fix, I talked about specifically the way to save The Office was to break up Pam and Jim.
Yes, I do remember.
That Jim should have had an affair so that we all, including Pam, hate Jim, so we could see the Jim that we love earn back her love, therefore our love.
Mm-hmm.
This fight over moving to Philadelphia and shooting Cece seems so watered down. I don't know who could care about this. This seems very last minute.
Not for any, and Ed Helms is just gone. Like, I don't, did he leave the show too?
Well, I believe
it's referring to him. Oh, he's on a business trip.
Yeah, what happened in the plot of this? The family lost all their money and they're selling their yacht. So him and his brother drove the yacht. That's probably not the right term. Drove it to New York. So he's out. I'm assuming this is because Ed Helms is filming Hangover 3. he's not even in the credits anymore, but I assume he probably is going to come back for the finale. I think we will see him again. But
I mean, the show is so rudderless that it was supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be Steve Carell. Then he's gone. Then they're like, oh, well, we're going to bring in James Spader. That didn't work. He's gone. Well, Ed Helms is like, well, no, he's gone. Jim doesn't even work there. I mean, it's really...
Well, and it is that interesting question. This is how bad The Office has gotten at this point. Which is worse? Ed Helm as a horrible captain of the ship, or no captain of the ship, and the show just being
so rudderless,
which is the exact right term for it. I don't know which is worse. They're both so bad.
I mean, talk about like the opposite of Seinfeld of like, we're going to go out on top. We're just going to go until the wheels come off.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're heading towards the idea that at the end, Pam and Jim are going to move to Philadelphia and leave The Office, and maybe that's sort of the end of this, and he does well at a sports
just
marketing
burn
company.
The place down.
Although
burn.
I will say in the episode,
I got all that paper.
In the episode, you did not see the. We finally see the previous episode. We see the office of the sports marketing company where Jim works and the other co-workers, and one of the other co-workers is played by Ben Silverman, of former agent at NBC and now the head of Alectus. In a cameo, Ben Silverman was the executive at the time, Reveille, who made the show happen. But I would imagine if Ben Silverman was one of the people running the company, I would not put much stock in Jim's sports marketing company making it for very long.
And then there was one other thing I wanted to say with The Office, that Steve Carell, I guess, said this week that he will not be back for The Office finale. Did you catch that?
I had heard that he had indicated that a few weeks ago.
And I didn't click on the link.
Smart of Carell to not come back at this point. This is, you know what? This thing, let his last moment be his last moment. They ended on such an up note. The last two seasons have been really rough goings. I think it would be not smart for Carell to attach his name to it.
Really? Okay. I feel like it's a little bit like, really? You're not even going to come back for
a shot? I will say that is smart for him. I do feel like he probably owes them.
Yeah.
I think that if Greg Daniels were to say, Steve, I never asked for a favor mm-hmm. before. I'm asking now. The show really needs it. He probably should do it because of how, you know, the show really made his career. But you know what? It is the wise choice not to come back. And it wouldn't surprise me if he shows up in an uncredited, unpromoted cameo at the very end or something. But
like, they can't even have him like on Skype, like, hey, guys, I heard the office is burning down.
Yeah. But if this is something he got out right, you know, and as I've said before, the quality of The Office had really started to tank before Steve Carell left, and yet we now all remember it as that the show was great until he left, which is not true, but good on him for getting out while the getting was good.
Do you want to hear the quote from Steve Carell?
Please.
So this is, they talked to him at, he told Access Hollywood at Sundance. He said, I just didn't think it was right for the character because that character had an arc within the story and kind of grew and sort of evolved past the idea of the documentary.
Yeah.
So it sounds a little bit like I didn't want to.
Exactly.
I didn't feel like it.
Yeah.
All right.
Sounded like I don't need a ticket for that shit show. That's what it really sounds like.
Have you been watching The Office?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So that was Saturday Night Live. That was The Office. And we'll follow both of these things as we go towards the spring. And football is, you know, we got Super Bowl Sunday next week. But, you know, football is over on Sundays. That's really the time-consuming part of my weekend. So hopefully we can get back on track with these shows.
Yep.
For we have a small but I think very dedicated listenership for these SNL podcasts.
Love it.
Yes.
Yep.
I got a lot of complaints that we didn't do one in December.
I think that it might have just been me with 18 different usernames.
A lot of people was like, hey, where is, very indignant also, where is the SNL podcast?
Yes. It was also the perfect storm. We had a horrible episode and a fantastic episode back to back, which often makes for good podcasts.
Very good podcast. All right. So, Rich, what are you working on at the Rich Fix?
Talking about very soon be posting, very exciting about moving from AT&T to Verizon and how we need to fix Verizon. Very exciting.
Whoa.
Yes.
What aspect of Verizon? The phone, the cellular service?
The fact that on Verizon, when you're on a phone call on the iPhone, you have no data. You cannot get any internet data like you could on AT&T. Sounds small, but it's actually quite big.
At least
in my crazy obsessive gadget world, it's a very big deal.
Right, especially if you're talking to a lot of people too that you'd like to.
You would like to be multitasking while talking to them. But in true fashion, I have a Rich Fix. So that's coming this week.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
All right. And then coming up this week on Rob as a Podcast, very big week coming along. Rich, we are in the midst of the Miss Survivor finals.
Wow.
Right now. Yes. So we're going to have our finalist interview on Monday with R.C. St. Amour, We're going to have our interview with Chelsea Meisner. We're going to have a few other, smaller interviews along the way here this week. And plus, Nicole and I are going to record our Survivor Karamoan, Survivor 26, Rich.
Yep.
We'll record our preview later this week with just 2 weeks to go until the Survivor Karamoan premiere on February 13th. Two-hour premiere, Rich.
That's crazy. It seems like only a month and a half ago that the last Survivor ended.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. It was only a month and a half ago that the last Survivor ended.
Well, this is going to be the very busy season because we're going to have the Survivor and then Amazing Race premieres the week after that on Sunday, or a few days after that on Sunday, plus the return of the Celebrity Apprentice. I really feel like you would enjoy the Celebrity Apprentice.
All right. I could be in Celebrity Apprentice.
They've downgraded it down just 1 hour.
Oh, now you're talking my language.
Celebrity Apprentice All-Stars.
All right, I could jump into
Big Brother Canada. You have any interest in that?
What?
Big Brother Canada is going to start very soon also.
Here in the United States?
Well, it's going to be in Canada, but I'm sure there's going to be ways to watch it.
Oh, hey. All right. That seems like just a lot of nice people living together deferring to each other. I don't know if that's, or as I call it, Big Brother One.
Big Brother One.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But it's going to be the same rules as American Big Brother.
All right.
So... there's that, and you know, plenty more to come. And if you want to, keep us in the podcasting business, you know what to do. Keep on shopping at those links for Amazon. Rob has a website.com/Amazon. Very much appreciate it when you do that. So, anything else, Rich?
No, I'm excited to follow all the Survivor stuff.
Yeah, it's gonna be a perfect storm of reality TV. This is truly from February to May. This is the busy season.
I love it.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you again later. Bye.